JT, are you in the new office? But JT, by the way, for our listeners and for our guests, is becoming all professional on us now and is actually building. What do you call it? A studio, an office? What is a cooler sounding
office? It's a big open room. I got tired of tripping over cables and light stands and stuff. Like, I just need to find somewhere that's not this tiny little 10-foot by 9-foot converted bedroom. And it's good. Yeah, I've got my little obligatory gear wall behind me that all the YouTubers do. I'm building a fake, like a volume with 3 TVs, El Cheapo LED wall. Probably about 5 sets in here now. So it's pretty cool. I've been enjoying it. Yeah, I mean, it was about time. I've been doing this stuff for like 7 years now, still, you know, struggling with a tiny little room and my daughter screaming downstairs. I'm gonna have to restart the lines, like, you know, bless her heart, but I need to get some work done.
What do you think? Do people need more equipment for recording or for what would you call it? Applied art, visual art? Because here we have visual artists as well. And I wouldn't call us artists, but people who use scream into a microphone.
Schmucks.
Yeah. What do you guys think?
I used to have a lot of equipment because I used to do a lot of videography myself. I've directed and produced like 50 music videos in my career.
Wow.
And I used to shoot them because I used to think, oh, I'll be a proper filmmaker. And my whole process has been a process of minimalization of everything I own.
Mm-hmm.
I sold my cameras. I gave away my chroma key stuff. I got rid of my lights. I even built my own lighting system, which... It was really ghetto. It was power bars with these plug-in light outlet things. You could like plug a light outlet into a thing, and that would make these mm-hmm. light banks out of power bars. And I put them in like washing tubs that I would cover with wax paper to build like floodlights. And adapt the scale of them depending on what I needed. And I built like my own Fresnel lenses and stuff because I was so cheap. And I just threw all that stuff in the garbage. It looked like a crazy person's garbage day.
It was only a matter of time before you electrocuted yourself anyway, so that's probably for the best.
Yeah, it was really dangerous. and so I was just, at a certain point, I was like, no, I want nothing. I just want a box. I want a single PC. And it has been a process of like just reducing it to... Because now I have like this giant Cintiq screen, and I just... work on that. That's it.
That's awesome.
And then I have like a closet full of shit that I will never use that I should always get rid of.
Yeah, I watch a lot of, you know, those YouTube, like the desk tours and stuff, and they always look so aesthetic and things. You're like, but they don't show you the cables that are running everywhere and all the garbage they have to turn on for everything that they do. I'm like, man, I just want to use my laptop. More and more I found like I get every cable out of here. I swear if I see one more dongle, I'm going to lose my mind.
I've got I like to use a laptop and a Wacom for drawing, but I mean, like to hook up this mic and headphones to talk, I have to use a adapter because Macs don't have any USB ports anymore, and you know, so my desk does look like a jumble of wires.
I've currently got a poorly run XLR cable and a long coiled Audio Technica audio cable draped over my lap because I don't want to keep this on my desk at all times. I'm like, I'm just gonna put it up for this, the recording, and then I'm gonna stuff it back in the drawer.
Yeah, like I bought a desk that is like basically wireless. You plug it into the electricity, and then it has like electric outlets on top of the desk, so the cables are basically invisible. Up until fucking JT made me buy a goddamn MacBook, and now just for me to hook it up to basic fucking devices, I need 300 different converters and 700 cables so that it works properly because it's, you know, not Apple
you
certified.
You need one USB-C cable.
Yeah,
you
and then
one.
It's connected to this massive fucking adapter thing. But Jesus Christ, talk about first world problems or whatever the fuck. Speaking of first world problems and equipment, didn't you hear about that guy? I think that was like 3 years ago or 4 years ago, that was like a live streamer and had like this like first floor office filled with like fancy cameras and like basically a recording studio and so on, and he just got robbed. Like people would sit in a car outside, wait for his stream to finish, he would go home, and they would just rob the shit out of it. Obviously, oof. Fucked up, not funny. but kind of fucking hilarious. Like robbing a streamer, it just sounds funny. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Should have been on stream. That would have gotten good numbers.
Robbing a streamer plus time equals comedy.
Yeah. Objectively correct.
Objectively correct.
And not much time either.
No.
Yeah, we're talking like a week, you know, like a couple days even, if it's a weekend, long weekend.
I'm honestly like, I expected ever since the live stream was invented, a lot more like live stream killing sprees and like shit like
that. Oh my God.
No, like genuinely, like all these like fucked up individuals that do it, they pre-record it. But motherfucker, what if you get killed and then they take the fucking GoPro off your head and shit? Like just properly live stream that stuff and it will forever be etched into random TikTok scrollers' minds, you know? Oh, I just am watching my little dances and my little routines and all of a sudden, oh, there you go, a beheading, which is quite literally the biggest difference between, I would call it, pre-2008 internet and post-2008 internet. Obviously, this is like borderline fallacy and, you know, that's not really how PTSD works, but for sure, you know, people who are like, I don't know, 25 plus now, all those hours that we've spent on live leaks, etc., and 4chan like boards probably influenced our mental psyche at least to a certain degree.
Well, let me tell you about being 40. And, you know, back in my day, we had Rotten.com.
JPEG.
I feel like I saw the worst things. I saw everything that you could see, I would think, by the time I was, you know, 17 or whatever. But there have been some live streaming mass shootings, but I think they've done a decent job of like taking them down really quick and erasing all like people who copy them and post them. But probably less so now that Musk is in charge of Twitter and there's like a lot more disinformation, and there'll just be like a live streamer or a guy live streaming, you know, mass killing. And then there'll be like a community note underneath that will say, this is not good.
Live killing, live killing, not good.
There was that one recently that was just incredibly dystopian. It was some kid and he had, you know, a proper magazine. I think he had a drum mag or something and whatever gun he was carrying. And the commenters, they were just like roasting him for his accuracy and his KD. It's like, what, Jesus Christ, is this what we've come to? Because he wasn't hitting anybody. And so people were just, even know why you'd watch that and then have the capacity to comment something like that. Oy, I don't know. Wild, wild times we're living in. I can't wait to see what's next.
Yeah, information made us no good, let me tell you.
Yeah, honestly, the internet was a mistake.
I remember early Facebook without content moderation.
Yeah.
And the amount of people getting blown up. I remember there was this one time a guy from high school, this is near the end of my Facebook career, a guy from high school posted a compilation video of partisans from the Middle East getting blown up by helicopter fire or rockets or Americans basically shredding human beings. And I flagged it for content moderation. And the content moderation said, no, this is fine. It's fine to show Arabs dying. Jesus. And that's when I was like, this sucks. The internet sucks. Yeah.
Shut it down. Pull the plug.
I made a video about like turbo folk and like war music and the war in the Balkans and memes that come out of that, blah blah blah. And in the whole video I have like footage upon footage upon footage of, you know, ex-Yugoslav nationalities firing real guns at each other, tanks, fucking houses being lit on fire, shit blowing up, etc., etc. And I only had around 15 seconds because I made a parallel between how the fighting was done with how the fighting was done, I believe, in during the Iraq invasion. And that, and in those 15 seconds, it was like American soldiers under fire and shooting at whatever they perceived as the enemy. And those 15 seconds got flagged as, you know, I'm showing combat footage and I'm showing, you know, exertion of aggression, etc., etc. While, you know, the non-humans, I guess, when it's the Balkan monkeys or whatever fucking shooting each other, then it's absolutely fine. Then, you know, this is historic footage. This is journalistic footage, et cetera, et cetera. But when it's one of our guys getting shot, then it's, you know, it's insensitive and taboo. But yeah.
I saw a video this morning of a Palestinian guy in Gaza carrying limbs of his children in a like grocery bags, and you know, I don't know what to do with this stuff. It's like, you know, they're not going to show that stuff on mainstream news, and it's kind of important to be aware of, but it's also just insane that you have this device in your pocket that we're like addicted to, but you also need. It's just like, oh, all your friends are in there, all your news. For me, a lot of my job is associated with it, and then you just like go through this feed and there's like people making jokes, and there's a guy with pieces of his dead son's arms, and then here's someone promoting their book, and it's just a psychotic way to experience the universe.
Yeah, we were not built to consume this much in such an easy fashion. No. Yeah, it's wild. Ah, man.
No, and we're all insane now. We're all insane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, this last week, I felt like I've been taking crazy pills. I'm like, what? The difference in what I'm seeing online from these sources, you know, sources from around the world, and what is being shown in Western media is just nuts. I'm like, surely someone will acknowledge the extent of the horror here, but no. Nobody.
I take this online directing class, an animation directing class, and I was in the class, and one of the guys used to live in Israel, and the teacher of the class was asking, like, oh, did you get out of, are you in Israel right now? What's going on? And then the entire, everyone in the class, very normal people, definitely not as online as I am, everyone been like, oh, it's so horrible what's happening to the Israelis right now.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, because I don't want to alien, like, it's a class.
Right.
It's nice people. Yeah. They don't know. Yeah. I'm not going to attack or freak out. But just like hearing one person being like, oh, it's so horrible. I really wanted to go on Birthright, but they suspended it for some reason. Oh. Da 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 da. And I'm just like, you guys, I'm right on the edge of yelling at you.
It's like, on the one hand, you're like, you're so overwhelmingly furious with these people. And on the other, it's like, well, to what extent is it their responsibility to educate themselves on the matter? Like, well, this is the first genocide in history that has been fully broadcast, live streamed. All of the information is available at your fingertips. It's just a matter of, you have to go out and collect it. And I guess there is a disconnect for people who aren't terminally online. Like, they don't know how to collect it. Like, if they're not spoon-fed the information on Fox or CNN or MSNBC or whatever, it might as well not exist. And it creates such a divide. It's wild.
But they still want to voice their fucking opinion. That's the
And they're the most adamant about it too. Yeah.
And there's this intellectual self-defense, like, it's a real slippery slope, because if you're like, okay, well, the news is lying to me, that's a fucked up thing to have to process, because then you need a completely new ontology. It's like, oh, the news lies. If the news lies, then what can be true? And then if you lack a model of the world after that, which is usually a real problem with people who get cognitive dissonance, is that there's no succinct model waiting in the wings to give, like, there's no Marxism waiting in the wings to like swoop in and be like, okay, let's talk about production. Materialism to help people parse the world after that. When you lose that, you go off into cloud cuckoo land, and you see that with QAnon. Like, the second you're like, oh, fake news, JFK is going to come back and he's going to run for president with Donald Trump, and I'm going to take any a bunch now of drugs and hang out in Pittsburgh, and now all my savings are gone.
Yeah, it's the type of worldview that might lead one to join the Libra gang.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of The Deprogram. And today's a very special day indeed, because we have not one, but two impressive comrade artists joining us on our little disorganized adventure. Ben Clarkson, the visual king of the left, a cartoonist, artist, and animator. His art has been shown all over the world, from New York to Hong Kong, and he is one of the heads behind Justice Warriors, a hilariously brilliant, slightly political comic available now. And if he's one head, then who's the other? Well, nothing special, just a two-time Pulitzer finalist, Eisner-winning comic editor, Matt Borse. He's been published in everything from The Guardian to The Nation, founded The Nib, which has published over 6,000 comics, and a generally funny guy. Thank you guys for coming on the show. Please, for those in the audience who for some reason might not have interacted with your work, could you please tell them a bit about yourself?
Ben?
Oh, me.
You are the king of the left, the illustration king of the left goes first.
I'm the visual king of the left. I'll take it.
But this
I'll
is a dual monarchy, so you have the other kingdom with Matt, obviously. But please,
I get the Western kingdom. Western kingdom is mine.
Gopnik intros dips. Ruining friendships 101. Yeah. I'm fucking.
You can have the Eastern Empire.
We are working on a two-state solution for this.
I'm Ben. I'm an animator and illustrator working out of Montreal. And we have this beautiful book, Justice Warriors, that we've been telling people about. What do I do here? You go, man.
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay. Let's
see. How do
I
introduce myself? Fuck!
Yeah, I mean, I'm Matt, the second head of Justice Warriors, of the two-headed Hydra of Justice Warriors. I mostly have been a political cartoonist. I was a political cartoonist for 18 years. And if you've been online a lot, you probably saw some of my work. I did that relatively well-known comic, the guy in the well, Mr. Gotcha, that kind of is used as a reaction meme. Hopefully other comics that people are aware of besides that one. And then 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I hooked up with Ben and we started working on this comic book.
Sick. So it took for 2 years you guys developed it.
Well,
Ben had been working on it.
Yeah, I've been developing it as an animated series for about a decade. Very slowly. That's why it took a decade. And I was trying to get this comic off, or not comic, animated series off the ground. And I loved Matt's work. And so I just started DMing him on Twitter. And he checked his junk mail one day. So we actually connected. Once Matt was on board and started picking away at this thing that I built, it really exploded into something really interesting. And we decided to work on it as a comic because you don't need $20 million to make a comic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just five. Yeah. But
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'd love that.
So before we even properly begin, I just want to put it out there, or kiss some ass, that I've read through Justice Warriors and it was absolutely fantastic, hilarious, brilliantly written and designed, but most importantly, class conscious as fuck. I deeply recommend our listeners check it out and explore it. It will definitely stay with you, that I can promise you. Now, let's, start our conversation with this specific piece of work without hopefully spoiling anything significant. And this was very fucking difficult for me because I want to talk about so many different aspects and plot twists and so on, but unfortunately I can't. So please give our listeners an overview of what the story is about.
Justice Warriors is a story that takes place, the place is very important, in a city in the future, a sort of nondescript distant future, and the city's called Bubble City. And Bubble City is a massive domed utopia where there is no want, no crime, equality has been met, the liberal dream has been realized. And the only problem is just outside of the Envirodome is a vast, almost unending slum of mutated, disgusting figures. And this slum is called the Uninhabited Zone. And the Uninhabited Zone is full of crime and racial hatred and discrimination, and somebody has to take care of that slum. And so the Bubble City Police Department, the BCPD, has been charged with policing the zone and make sure nothing bubbles up to challenge the rule of the bubble. And so it's a satire of police media. It's a satire of copaganda, and we sort of use the form of cop shows and cop stories and cop movies to satirize and skewer and reveal class structures, social structures. We go after economics, crypto, fascism, woke language, AI, communications, social media. It's a satire of our society. It's a satire of every aspect of society. We call it a mega satire. And it follows two cops, Swamp Cop and his new partner, Shit, who's an anthropomorphic pile of shit. Yeah. And they do police shootings and solve crimes.
When I reach the fucking page and I'm looking at it, I'm like, did they really make him a shit? Is he actually a shit? And then I'm like, okay, maybe he's going to be, because I didn't look at the cover. And then I'm like, maybe he's not going to be like a constant character. But no, so a piece of shit in a uniform
main character
is continuously the main fucking character. It's absolutely incredible. By the way, why did you shit? I get, but where did the inspiration come for a swamp?
Swamp Cop. It isn't
pig is too easy, right? Pig is too easy. Like, you could have gone that route. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Swamp Cop, it's hard to describe, because Swamp Cop has been around for like 10 years, and I just started drawing him. A lot of this stuff starts very visually for me, and he just sort of stuck around. But I guess the logic of him is like a little bit like Drain the Swamp. Mm-hmm. Like, he is a creature from the Black Lagoon. He's a mutated, disgusting amphibian thing. Like, he's in both worlds. He's of the swamp. He's of the bog. Mm-hmm. And he's unappealing. He's Shrek. He's basically Orange Shrek. It's Shrek as a cop.
And I love the addition of him being, let's call it, that. Those types of guys aren't single. I call them wifeless. Like,
yeah.
They blame half of their fucking issues on the fact that they haven't managed to find a partner, and they haven't managed to find a partner because they will end up blaming all their issues on the partner. But
Swamp, Swamp is married to the law.
Yeah, exactly.
Is definitely an incel, and you know, has some mental health issues. And then Shit, I think, despite his exterior appearance and smell, is and you know, the fact that he is a cop and he gets involved in a what we call a police involved shooting in our world. Yeah. I forget what we call it in the book, but he is somewhat likable, naive rookie type. And, you know, Shit is only, it's S-C-H-I-T-T. It's the German, and it's, he took his wife's name. He has a hot wife.
Very hot wife. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that influences the interaction between him and his colleague, but then also additionally influences, because as we found out, she's not only hot, but she has very key information for this grand enemy which they are fighting. Man, I'm trying so hard not to spoil shit, but
we'll have to talk about the Libra gang. I mean, I guess they don't show up until when, you know, they don't really become fully formed until maybe halfway through the series, but it's not the major spoiler. You know, there is some major spoilers.
There's some twists. There's twists and turns through the book.
And most of them you don't see coming, and you love where they go when they actually arrive, because like, Jesus, did you really like write this? And then it starts making sense. You're like, holy fuck, that's fucking hilarious. But the book obviously explores topics of class, fascism, racism, police brutality, late stage capitalism, everything you've mentioned. But what aspect of the story was the most fun for you guys to explore, and why was it the cops?
I guess it was the cops, but just like the buddy dynamic and having fun with the fact that they're committing a lot of violence in it that is both horrific and kind of funny and enjoyable to watch. And they're not exactly the good guys. whether you're rooting for them or not sort of depends. I don't, you know, you're not really rooting for them necessarily. You're just sort of watching what's happening in the uninhabited zone in the bubble. I think the best part of it, though, writing, thinking about it, was the dynamics of the economy, because that sort of drives the plot. Like, Bubble City is a physical structure, but we also made it an economic problem between the bubble and the UZ, is that the economy is constantly booming and busting. And what that does is it creates new forms of crime and social hysteria that the cops then have to react to. And the mayor, who's a pop star named The Prince, not to be confused with
the pop star Prince.
On, not to be confused with, different guy, but sort of similar. Like, if, I mean, Prince is a great musician, but it sort of would be like if you had Prince or any deranged celebrity as your mayor or president of the whole area. You wouldn't want it. You wouldn't.
Didn't that happen once for the Yanks?
You wouldn't want a Ronald Reagan, for instance, or a Donald Trump. But it's even, you know, Donald Trump already existed when we wrote this, and we wanted to, you know, it's like, it's almost like if Kanye West had become president and he was but not just Kanye West, but like a Kanye West who was like this, you know, seventh generation royalty or something.
Yeah.
Like the prince in the bubble has this kind of air to him. So anyway, the economy stuff is, you know, there's each issue almost a sort of economic event happens and the prince sort of responds with, you know, maybe a stimulus program or some sort of economic scheme to keep things floating. And then it sort of creates another problem. And that's where the main story comes from, a sort of social unrest that comes from the economic boom and bust.
Yeah, we wanted to, that part was really fun to write because it led us, The initial premise was that this thing is out of control. And more as we wrote it, we realized, oh, it's all about control. And it's all about how there's these forces that end up influencing people's lives that, like, can take control of their bodies and, like, grab people, and how we are being sort of dragged along by this system that we're a part of, but we're not really aware of the depth or the real thing that's happening. And so it ends up being sort of a critique of ideology, which I was really happy where we got there from, you know, swamp monsters and shit, that we can have a critique of ideology in the book.
And there's lines that are not very direct that critique ideology, understanding of what the status quo is, what normalcy is, how that can be overturned on its head, just through the depiction of Bubble City, and how, at least for me, it looks like an absolute possible reality if we, you know, go even further awry the way we're going. But also there's like very direct shit that's like that's just well thought of. For example, there's a let's call it a scene where there's a cop protecting like a shop. I'm not going to spoil much. And they're the only two people there. And then the shop owner tells the cop, "I am a property owner. That means I rank higher than you. You got to listen to me now." And that was like just that dynamic and who actually the piggies, sorry, the shits and the swamp people serve is depicted. And
I mean, Yeah, that is what it is all about, really, is protecting property. You know, that is a lot of what the police do. And you would probably, you would call everyone who's, you know, even the leftiest lefty is going to call the police under certain circumstances. I mean,
yeah, it's our last resort.
They're the ones who are licensed. And it's not great that they are the ones who are tasked with solving a ton of society's problems, including, you know, homelessness and drug addiction. But they're the ones who are tasked with doing it by force and are licensed to use force to ultimately solve the problem.
Yeah, and there's this other side to the, because you asked us why we focused on the cops. And there's this other aspect in police fiction, but also in like our actual world, that the cops are charged with investigation. There's no other social structure that we have where there is like an investigation into crime. The cops sort of
except
have like this
podcasters,
dual...
but yeah, podcasters yes. and cops. Yeah,
yeah, but
we are the people.
Podcasters should be issued a badge.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Fuck yeah! Fuck
here's
yeah.
your microphone. And
a
your
police state is sounding better
gun.
Every day, baby.
And so we can explore the world of Bubble City because a huge part of the book is just like getting introduced to this world and understanding that this world isn't that different from our own world and us being able to satirize our own world through this cartoon version of our world. And so we can explore that world through the cops because cops do investigations. And so it ends up being a form. This is done a lot in cop fiction. I have learned from researching all the cop fiction is that it's a really great way of telling a story as an investigation. Mm. And so there is this aspect of cops that is intrinsic to their current form, which is investigation. So let's investigate this world of Bubble City.
And obviously the world of Bubble City develops in what looks like fiction, as I mentioned before, a faraway dystopia filled with mutants, poop cops, pop star mayors, but it smells, if you know what I mean, just like our world, a bit dialed maybe to a 9 or a 10. Most writing we tend to see in fiction generally, while obviously inspired by the real world, tends to shy away from, you know, direct condemnation of the current status quo for, I don't know, fear of being called quote-unquote political, even though all of us here know the eternal cliche, but absolute truth that I'll utter for the 7 billionth time, that everything is political and everything is ideological. And, you know, when they don't shy away from it, in contrast, we usually get, you know, vanilla liberal shit where the bad guy is the radical that is pissed off with how things are run, but because he's radical, he wants to change it by, for some reason, blowing a bunch of people up or some shit. And then the moderate hero comes in and says, yeah, what you're fighting against is bad, but you're worse because of your methods. Mm. And that's supposed to, you know, be deep and wise and shit. Not sure which approach is worse. But anyways, we wanted to ask you as class-conscious artists, which I have aptly knighted you to be, why do you think there's so little direct criticism of the status quo in most media and fiction in particular? The, I don't know, need for escapism, writer cowardice, or, you know, it just doesn't sell, maybe.
I think it's structural because usually the distribution... It's a commodity at the end of the day. When you're buying, I'm putting on my Marxist hat. I'm taking off my class consciousness hat and putting on my Marxist hat. It's
I
a commodity.
Was betting on that, baby. Yep.
When something is a commodity, it has to, in many ways, even if it's an anti-commodity commodity, the message is subverted. Like, I'm going to go to McLuhan here that the medium is the message, then the medium is a commodity. You can't blow up MTV with a music video. You can't blow up comics. Like, we still want you to go out and buy the comic. Please go out and buy the comic. Right. And so, like, with TV, very much I see it structurally as you want to maintain TV with TV. Systems reproduce themselves, which is also one of the themes of Justice Warriors and, like, the deep down, the main structural theme that I see in the book is that systems try to reproduce themselves. So it's very hard for something to subvert itself, to be self-destructive. And this is something that I see in cop media all the time, is that there's always it's an Oedipal story. Like, you need to be taught how to reproduce society through the cop story. And there is a sort of subgenre of cop story, which are these very cynical movies, like Demolition Man, which are anti-Oedipal, which lead to the destruction of society. And so, like, from the perspective of an anti-commodity, a commodity that's going to interrupt commodities, it becomes anti-Oedipal, which is a...
Are you following along?
Strange tension. Sorry, I'm going to... I go off on I go to Cloud.
Please go do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. Go on.
No, Ugopnik loves it. This is normally his job. He's like, oh God, where's Ugopnik going? What deranged Slavic analogy is coming next?
It's the pole in me.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Fucking the program Race Science Returns. There you go. Of course, he's fucking Slavic. Sorry. But yes.
Only the Slavic mind can read Deleuze. Only a Slav.
I don't know if this is exactly what you're asking or not, but I mean, it just got me thinking that, you know, most people that tell stories or, you know, make films, I mean, their primary goal is the medium, is to make a good comic, mm-hmm, is to make mm-hmm. a good TV show. I mean, they might be political, but their goal is not to inspire a revolution or to, you know, dictate to you in the way that a political tract would be that is handed out on the street, that is just pure and arguably ineffective, you know, pure political thought being barraged at you.
Yeah.
So, you know, most people don't, I think that Justice Warriors on the one hand is probably the most political comic on the stands in 2023, but also, like, you know, we made a big attempt to make it readable for people who aren't into the things that we're talking mm-hmm. about on this podcast. You know, like you can kind of, I think you could be a dummy and just read it and like it because it's fun. And, you know, you would obviously get that there's political things going on, but we really, while those things are kind of a lot of the politics are front and center and obvious, we also weren't like trying to offer solutions. I mean, mm-hmm. it's not a big spoiler to say this is following the cops from the cops' perspective, and it doesn't, the society doesn't end in a leftist utopia by the end of it. That's not mm-hmm. really the point of Justice Warriors. So there's a critique of society, but I mean, it's hard to provide answers and say, oh, this is what everyone should be doing, because one, that, you know, you typically makes a bad story.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also the antagonist is basically the group of people who are like, hey, we have a solution to the problems yeah. of the bubble. Because I do believe that it is a liberal response to be like, oh, I know the solution to this. People just have to be polite on the internet this time. Or or we have to do it like Nelson Mandela did it. Or there's always this prescriptiveness, but that prescription is never adequate. And so we wanted to make fun of that. We wanted to make fun of the fact that we live in a neoliberal hell, and there isn't any clear activity that we can take part in, especially as for Matt and I, as like northern white guys, there's nothing we can actually do for the most part that can change the outcomes of the power structures that control our lives.
I think like what you said about the average person being able to pick up the novel and get something out of it and read it and understand it mostly, I think that's true, and I think that's important. Like all the little things in there that are kind of ouchy. Like there's one scene where the Uzzers, to use the slur, are robbing a convenience store, let's say under the influence. And they, you know, they're getting baby formula. They're stealing baby formula. And there's like a little smiling frog on the tin that says, keep your baby alive. It's like, so that little thing that you put in there, you're not doing this whole diatribe about, you know, theft to support your family, you know, is required. Yeah. It's, you know, morally right and all that stuff. You're just suggesting like, hey, there's a reason people steal this kind of stuff. So it's, I don't know. I think planting those little seeds goes a long way towards helping the average person kind of grapple with some more complex philosophical and political issues. I think that's great. I think you guys struck a really good tone.
And that, you know, that came from real life, because me and Ben have robbed stores at gunpoint for baby formula because we had...
You too? Oh, my God.
Well, I thought I was the only one.
How you get from our lives to... the opening scene you're describing, which is mutants that are controlled by starfish parasites mm-hmm. That, you know, control them. And starfish are getting the baby formula for reasons that aren't explained, but maybe don't need to be. Is the real life thing is that I had a kid who had a in 2020 who had a milk protein allergy and needed not only baby formula, but a special kind. Mm-hmm. And most people aren't thinking about baby formula their whole lives or using it. Then when you have to use it and you need to buy it so that your kid doesn't die. I mean, literally, you know, yeah. My kid could not digest breast milk or regular formula. And the only thing he can eat is a newborn. And then you realize, this stuff is extremely expensive and is locked at the store.
Yeah.
And it's locked so that people don't steal it. Well, it's not a jar of mayonnaise. It is, my baby would literally die without it. And you just mm-hmm. realize
that there are men who would die even, to stop you from getting baby formula for your your child.
And you know, it's just, you're just like, oh, in a world that made sense, certainly this would be provided to people who needed it, and including formula, right? Including all sorts of things, you know, starting in healthcare.
Heck, maternity leave.
My view of the world going very,
yeah, Jesus. You know,
I mean, yeah, well, I lived in the U.S. At the time. I live in Canada now. I'm from the U.S., but I didn't have any parental leave because I was self-employed, which just means figure it out. Anyway, those type of things are, coming, put into the comic that are, you know, coming from some real world experience or little things that we have that we're like, okay, how do I talk about this in a way that's not annoying and is actually
and
fun
and shit.
You know, it's like, well, it's like, we're going to do RoboCop, but the bad guys are stealing formula. You know,
that's what... Yeah, it's effective. It's super incredibly effective. It's, you know, it's simple, straightforward, and you do it in like one panel, two panels. I forget what it was, but yeah, that was one thing that stood out to me. So that was kudos to that. I think that was really effective.
And you mentioned earlier how, the world doesn't change and the story pretty much ends where it's begun for most of the population of Bubble City and the outside area, which in my modest opinion is always the right way to go when presenting kind of a world, be it one that parallels ours or critiques very specific aspects of our world, because presenting a direct solution always ends up being either cliche, either overtly simplistic, or hella lazy. I mean, what was it, Zizek, that uses the relatively decent example of what was that name with the guy with the anonymous mask? Fuck me.
V for Vendetta. Yeah. V for Vendetta 2. What happens in the next day.
Exactly. You know, in the end, you know, you're like, okay, they're going to overthrow this fascist government and so on. But you just ask, okay, what's going to happen after they overthrow it? How are they going to set up this society, et cetera, et cetera? And it's lazy exactly in like, either go full on in and show that aspect or show the reality of our world, which is up until, you know, all the contradictions otherwise said in human terms until people are too pissed off to fucking tolerate this, that nothing really changes. So shit keeps getting regurgitated. Shit keeps, you know, being put into uniforms and taken out on the street, et cetera, et cetera. So all I'm trying to say is that for some, when they see a story which represents a fucked up world and then it ends without that world really being changed, it might look like as if not enough effort was put in. And, you know, you shouldn't only talk about the development of your characters, but the world in general. But again, to repeat myself in my modest opinion, quite the opposite would be the lazier approach, the more naive approach, and borderline opportunistic, because it's we don't really know how this fucking thing will end. We can only guess, and we can only hope it does. But claiming that you do, and then even presenting it as something which characters in a film, in a book, and so on can achieve. Well, oh, you non-fictional motherfuckers cannot. Just feels relatively off-putting. But
yeah, it's chauvinism. It's complete self-aggrandizing that somehow
me who wrote this piece of work, I and the fictional characters I created, we managed to overthrow these bad guys. And you reading this, still living in this backwards world. You didn't manage to do it. It kind of feels like that, you know, telling
your
audience,
fuck you. It's
funny you bring
up V for Vendetta, because I did reread V for Vendetta, I think, last year, and for the first time in probably 20 years. And I really enjoyed it in a lot of ways and thought it was thought-provoking. But I found myself just being like, who the hell, like yelling at the guy, who the hell are you? What do you think? Who do you think you are? I mean, obviously, he's living in a... A fascist society, and
but who isn't
and I'm just saying that can justify a violent response, you know. Mm-hmm, but I was like, I don't know if this guy should be, I don't know if this nut should be in charge of anything. he traps the woman in the room and does the whole
it's insane, his response,
the fake torture thing, and then you're like. You're like, wow, okay. But I don't know if this is Alan Moore's intent, because I know he's a big anarchist and everything, but it's like, I this is just me getting a different interpretation from art, which is what you're supposed to do. But I read it and I thought, oh, maybe you are kind of supposed to come away thinking, no, this guy's insane and doesn't have all the answers, because he's trapping a woman in this room and doing this whole rigmarole with torturing her. And any sane person is not going to say, like, oh man, this guy is fucking got it all figured out. We'll just implement this plan tomorrow. We'll be rid of these right-wing governments. So I don't really know.
Yeah, if you think about it, most things aren't getting done because, you know, the masses are being placated by them giving us just enough. So if we quite literally ruin everything for absolutely everyone else to a greater extent, there's going to be more revolutionary fervor. You know, the argument, don't tip your fucking waiter so he gets more pissed off, you know, which is basically Guy Fawkes. Sorry for interrupting.
Well, and accelerationism, I'm sure appealed to me at some point in my life.
Like everyone.
I think it's, and I think it just doesn't, everyone doesn't respond how you want them to anything. So that's what it's kind of based on. It's like, well, you know, if everyone gets as mad as me and has the solution that I want to implement, then, you know, we can, if everyone is on board with me and we're all V for Vendetta Guy Fawkes dudes, I mean, it'll overthrow the government. We'll just be like that. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem to work out that way.
Well, because we lack the social... The only thing that really exists, like the social real, is liberal society. So we just end up relying again on liberal society. So what do we get? We get policing. We get privatization. Like, we would need to... I think about this a lot. You would need to actually construct a new set of social institutions yourself without the state, and how the fuck you're gonna do that without a penny to your name. So there you go, we live in Bubble City.
Yeah, even just our imagination is incredibly stunted on the issue. Like, if 90% of people can't even fathom what an alternative would look like, you're not even starting at square one, right? You're starting at like square negative 30. You got to build back up to zero understanding. You first got to unlearn everything and then learn something new.
Well, and I think about this a lot too, because I'm hopeful about constructing things like co-ops. I don't think it's a straight solution, but it at least creates a structure. The thing is, I think a lot of people are afraid of being in a co-op. Like, if I try to hire people into a co-op, they're like, I don't want to be responsible for a building or a business. We experience our social alienation as freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. we're already too deep into it. You know, you're not introducing, for the example of a co-op, you're not introducing the idea of, you know, join me in my co-op to literal babies, you know, humans uncorrupted by the ideological snake of capitalism. Yeah, no, it makes sense. No, there you go. That's the solution. The reverse Guy Hawk solution. So you don't have to torture them. You just kidnap babies. Oh my God. There we go. You just kidnap all the babies. You put them in your little commune, and that's what starts your new world. I think people tried that and it was fucked up. Yeah, sorry.
Well, yeah, there, a lot of people did that in the 60s and everything. They were just like, I'm not joining the Black Panthers or the Weather Underground. I'm just getting out of here,
forming
my commune. And then,
adventurous bullshit.
It turns out it's a sex cult, but
always.
Who could have known? Yeah.
I did want to say, though, that this is a perfect point to talk about the Libra Gang, because that really is, you know, we kind of took a lot of different things going on in society and ideologies and turned them into the Libra Gang to explain these points that Ben was making about, like, people without an understanding of the material world will sort of grasp at a random ideology or one that's fed to them. In the case of the Libra Gang, to explain it, what at first appears to be an anti-police and, you know, fix the economy movement is a mutant gang that is a Zodiac-based cyberpunk gang. They're sort of like if Libras decided to become an armed resistance, and instead of and they're like Maoists, but instead of trying to impose communism, they're trying to impose a celestial-based order where Libras are in charge of society, and then the other star signs will, you know, have different levels of society they're assigned to, with Cancers being proposed for elimination.
Zodiac racists, quite literally.
but it really is sort of like they know something is wrong. They say things that you can agree with. They know that that Bubble City and the world that they live in is fucked up, and their solution makes no sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
But in absence of, like, a solution that does make sense, a solution that doesn't make sense.
The vacuum is filled.
Yeah. There's a Zizek bit. I'm a big Zizek guy. Except recently. He sucks now.
Yeah, except recently. Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
Except, like, the past 10 years.
No ageism on the show, but yeah, after they turn 60, lock them up. Yeah, just forbid the internet gets taken away. My grandpa has literally been ruined. I just saw my grandpa. I went back to my whole country. I saw my grandpa. This motherfucker talked about how the war in Palestine, in Gaza right now, is so that they can take all the Palestinians and take them to Ukraine and the Donbass, where they're going to put them after they kill all the Russians. Like that is when you give a very old guy the internet. I'm sorry. A bit of ageism for a change. But please continue.
No, you should have to do like a CAPTCHA to get online, but like solve like remember your grandchildren's middle names. So there's this idea that, like, if you strip away some ideological structure, like if you strip away any aspect of society, you'll get to the truth, right? If you strip away the illusion, then on the other side is the truth, and that the truth is a real structure that exists outside of your own mind that you can reach just through a destructive act rather than having to take responsibility for the construction of something. That's like a central load-bearing myth to our society, is that you get rid of an illusion and then you have the truth. No, you get another shittier illusion.
Often much, much, much shittier. I mean, that's why we call them reactionary ideologies, and that's exactly where a lot of their power lies in, is that while compared to materialist ideologies that, you know, actually analyze the world, they're like, okay, this is how it's structured. These are the socioeconomic issues that need to be addressed in order for the power disbalance to be, reconfigured. Let's use those terms. While when it comes to fascistic ideology, you can latch on to absolutely any aspect of society. I mean, we've seen them latching on to vaccination. We've seen them latching on to the treatment of trans people, younger trans people, and so on. We've seen them latch back in the day, obviously, to just simply race, religion, and so on. And it's very difficult sometimes, especially for everyday people, to identify what is being done to them, which, as you beautifully put, is basically moving the attention away from both potential real solutions, but also from you know, the status quo, over to another fictionally created potential enemy. And that is why I was particularly enamored by the fascists, if I could call them that, in your story, the Libra Gang, as you mentioned, because you went with the most ultra mega giga fucking nonsensical and ultra basic type of shit, which is with the fucking zodiac sign, and yet you can absolutely see it happening. It's absolutely 100% possible. If we had lived in a society that still, for example, praises astrology as like the main religion or like the main caste system of the country, and you had a bunch of motherfuckers, in this case the Libras, that went out and redefined themselves as the top caste, you could very much so run a hyper-hierarchical society based on superiors and inferiors, which at the end of the day is the baseline definition of fascism. And the second I saw that developing, and I'm like, and when, you know, one of the characters goes out and actually says, you know, what they're about, and up until that moment you're hoping, oh man, these guys are some legit like revolutionaries and shit, and you're like, holy fucking shit, just a regurgitation of the same thing that we have, but in a different form. And to an extent, can you really even call a society based on astrological signs that much more insane than what we've had historically and have right now?
That is exactly the takeaway I think that we want readers to have, is to, you look at their ideology, and it's obviously insane. They're presented as the bad guys, you know, in the structure of the story. And there is at first, you know, presented as like, okay, well, this appears to be, you know, have a leftist critique to it. The cops are bad. There is sort of, you know, there's protests in the uninhabited zone and this movement is rising. And then you're like, oh yeah, no, this isn't Black Lives Matter. You know, this is it's something different. You know, you describe them as fascists, which I don't think I didn't think of them as
fascists, but you're correct. It is fascism.
They ultimately want to. Yeah, they're talking about replacing, you know, 1/12 of the the leadership will now, you know, the bubble will be emptied and all the Libras will go in. Cancers will be eliminated. And then, you know, they sort of are vague about exactly what happens to each of the other ones. But
the economy is probably going to stay the same.
Your working class and your servant class, and then you have people claiming to be Libras, and there's a joke in there somewhere about, you know, getting your birth certificate changed, and a certain percentage of society is now claiming that they actually are Libras, and that's probably how it would play out. And I guess at the time we were writing it, it was 2020-2021. You have all these things going on that influenced it. So first of all, a lot of people are into zodiac stuff online, Instagram, and, you know, maybe,
and get sucked
into
right wing movements now. There's a crystal mommy to QAnon,
crazy, right?
Exactly. So, you know, I've always kind of enjoyed it as nonsense and made fun of this kind of stuff. A friend actually got me did a tarot reading for me, and like a couple years ago, and I was like, I had this epiphany about, I was like, oh, it's making a story for yourself with pictures, and they have meanings, and then you just construct, and that's why it works on you, because whether something good in your life is going on or something bad, you project meaning onto it, and that's why people love this stuff. I mean, that's an obvious observation, but going through it for the first time and having a tarot reading and actually finding myself being like, oh, this actually kind of makes sense with what's going on in my life right now, made me realize the power of it and why people do get into it. So anyway, to finish this thought, it's you know, anti-vax and QAnon stuff. It's the guys trying to kidnap the governor of Michigan for lockdowns. It's also, but it does include some liberal critique as well. You know, they use sort of DEI lingo, which, you know, again, was big at the time and still is. But, you know, I see as people, there is a certain type of liberal that kind of gets obsessed with that stuff and thinks that saying the right terms and repeating these phrases has a kind of a power, like an incantation to get rid of oppression. And it doesn't. Yeah. It just is a way to try to get people to agree with you and say those terms so that you can get it, try to get everybody on the same page. But it feels like trying to force people onto the same page because everyone's like, I don't know, we don't really normally talk like this, and can't we just...
And I love how one of the main pillars of the new society that the Libras are going to create is that everybody's just going to be vibing and chilling. I don't remember exactly what term it is. And it's like the ironically, if I was building like a, you know, let's call it radically liberal or fascist movement, I would go that direction. I would make it as broad as fucking possible, obviously, while still targeting a particular group, which is not letting us chill and vibe, because the cancers always ruin the chill and the vibe. So if we all want to chill and vibe, like, as a society, we must remove those goddamn fucking cancers.
But yeah, sorry about that.
No, you're a cancer. Oh god. A Pole and a cancer. So Slavic and a cancer, literally my father. You're about to start
every
shouting.
Every Pole is a cancer.
You said that, not me. You mean you could have been saved, but you embraced
capitalism. Yeah, I'm taking that soundbite out of context.
Put it on a soundboard.
Yeah.
Put it on a meme with a, you know, a Hitler's face and it says
yeah,
quote and says, Ben, then it says what, visual king of the left, Ben Clarkson.
Every pole is a cancer.
Every pole is a cancer.
10 out of 10 Hitlers agree. Yeah.
Absolutely. But in, like, hardcore contrast to our vibey fascists, there's a great character in the plot, a dialectical fortune teller, let's call her, who's the only one kind of making any sense in this entire story, who gets, you know, to avoid spoilers, totally crushed by capital. I was very proud of that one. At one point, kind of showing us the direction of, you know, total abandonment of hope in this world far too lost for saving. Do you think, and we can start wrapping up with this kind of topic, do you think we're as fucked as Bubble City and its surrounding, or is there more hope for us?
We're totally fucked. We're totally fucked. Because there is no... Unless we get to a point where we can form some sort of consciousness... Because class consciousness, for the most part, in the West, is on the decline still. I don't think that there is a big upswing in the idea of what my relationship to production is. Because for the most part, we try to alienate people from production. That's our main idea. Of how to deal with a crisis is to offshore as much production as possible to move people towards much more speculative value creation. So I don't think that there is a viable identity within class for the West or the North. So I think that you would have to construct some other form of consciousness. And I think that that's a hard sell, and I don't know how that would be done. I do think that that's what some people are trying to do. I think that's what we're trying to grasp at, is to instill in people a more abstract understanding of what the fuck is happening around us. Mm-hmm. And we, when I talk about this, I talk about this with my wife all the time, because she's very involved in the environmental movement here in Canada, that we need to form some sort of abstract consciousness that engages with, one, the environment, because that's the thing that's really going to shoot our legs out from under us. And that might come from a material formation like class consciousness, where you start living a shitty life because of the environment you live in. It's definitely terrifying every time it's fire weather. Like it was real apocalyptic, and people went really insane this year because you couldn't breathe, you couldn't go outside, you couldn't do anything. And that exposure, just like the labor movement was exposed to the material conditions of production, I think the being exposed to the material conditions of the degradation of the environment will create some sort of consciousness. But I'm a pessimistic materialist. I think that the material world is in the driver's seat and that we are all, in a way, reactionaries. Matt, give us some hope.
No, I'm slightly more hopeful than Ben. It's not hard to be. I mean, you know, I don't have any illusions about, I don't know that a leftist utopia and is not going to be created in my lifetime, nor will the environmental problem be completely solved. But I guess I disavowed accelerationism earlier, but then, you know, what Ben is saying, I agree with, which is that as people are exposed to the vagaries of the market and environmental collapse, there's a lot more awareness and distress about it. I mean, we do see a massive uptick in unionization and strikes happening. So there is, hopefully that will continue. I mean, the only way that anything is going to change is through a mass movement that can actually affect change and put pressure on a system, using, in my opinion, a variety of tactics that all work in unison, from, you know, liberals who want to knock on doors to people who want to go read how to blow up a pipeline and, you know, go do industrial sabotage, which I'm not endorsing in any way. But
horrible. Very bad.
Hypothetically.
Commies coming on my fucking show saying this shit. Yeah.
But just as a, I think as a matter of fact, we're going to be seeing more of that in the future, you know, like I'm actually surprised there hasn't been more, because there was like a big kind of deep green radicals in the 90s, and
but they all got stitched up more, too. They did a real number on the
We could talk an hour for them, and I'm not really an anti-civ deep green guy, but anyway, I think we're going to see it. So and the fortune teller, I did want to just say that, you know, I am real proud of that part. It was basically us not just trying to have someone in there describe, you know, the actual world in a way that we kind of agree with, but to show that in this world, materialism is marginalized and kooky, and basically no one cares about it as much as in our world. How do people really take the Zodiac seriously? If you see someone posting memes about it all the time, and then you said, "Hey, what do you think about this?" They'd say, "Oh, I just think it's fun to think about. It's stupid."
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's how everyone in the US thinks about materialism, to the extent that they ever do. It's just like, oh yeah, like a you mean those scam artists you have to pay $10 to tell you what the problem is in the world, and then you pretend it applies to you. I know them.
I tried to imagine, when we were writing that segment, what a normal person would think of coming across, because I know a lot of normal people and they've never heard this perspective in their entire life. It sounds like gobbledygook, and it's incredibly scary to them too, because they've never heard the perspective before. So who knows if it's a thing that you can believe or not. And I really do, I wanted the reader to almost go through a scary moment where they're almost like the Libra gang, where they're being convinced of something that they're afraid of, and like, oh, that sounds like it makes a little bit of sense. Oh, thank God that she's gone.
Like that is giving me what's that English term? An additional layer of, let's call it, self-awareness, because I never actually thought about it in that context. Holy shit, though, like my quote-unquote cringe apolitical friends just think I'm like into zodiac signs, but in politics and shit. They probably think, he's not gonna start talking about this fucking shit again. Okay, capitalism bad. Yeah, you got Nick. Okay, yeah, good. Okay, we'll have a beer. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Describing how the world works makes you sound crazy.
Pretty much.
Certified oof.
Certified oof. End with that certified oof and that beautiful, beautiful sentence that might actually be the title of this episode. What did you say? Saying how the world works makes you look crazy. We will wrap up this absolutely brilliant episode and leave a bit of space for these two brilliant men to come on to this show again. With all that being said, before I go on and rant too much, boys, could you please, please, please tell our audience where they can find your work? Which, by the way, Hardcore Criticism. You could, like, I want to buy the hard copy, but I can't in Europe. But I know you'll fix that. please tell our audience where they can find your work. Thank you for coming on.
You can find me on X.com, the everything app, at Ben Clarkson.
Fuck you. We will censor that.
Every time I say it, I get laughs.
A beep.
Yeah.
You can find me on X.com, the everything app. And hopefully there's you guys could be so gracious to post a Simon and Schuster link to
all the links. Send me 100,000 links. I'm gonna plug that stuff. Don't worry.
Please buy the book. Please buy our commodity so that we can get money and then invest that into the production of more commodities. Keep an eye out for maybe a potential sequel to Justice Warriors.
Holy which shit,
is
yes.
Potentially already in production. Potentially already well into production, which we I'm sure we can't talk about.
You mentioned us, maybe there's more Justice Warriors. I mean, if it's not clear to people, and I guess we didn't explain it, this is intended to be a world that we can tell stories in forever. Like,
yes.
Ben and I have a ton of ideas, and the general gist is that it's like we want each volume to sort of be about a different aspect of society.
It's like The Wire.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like one volume might be about drugs. One volume is we want to do like what the Olympics or sports look like in this crazy world, what an election might look like. So hopefully we get around to all those. The response has been good, but we intend, this is a creator on comic that we hope to go on like indefinitely, really.
Yeah. To ensure that those things happen, please buy the book.
Feed these men.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want the extended Bubble City universe, ladies and gentlemen?
Baby formula is expensive. My kid doesn't need it anymore, but
developed a taste for it.
Yeah. And a good scotch.
I'll tell you
really
what,
hit the spot.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, that stuff is so, it smells so bad. It's unbelievable. I don't know if you have had a kid, if you've smelled breast milk, or if you just buy it, from your your dom or something. You buy it, because you have a fetish. Breast milk, sweet, smells nice, sweet, light. Baby formula, disgusting.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
Slop.
Yeah, it's I can't believe it.
And can we find you, Matt, on X.com, the everything app?
Yeah. I had to take
the opportunity.
I'm about to throw my pen at my screen, you son of a bitch. I take back everything I said about you coming back on.
I'm on all the major social media networks as Matt Boers. Pretty easy to find me.
Lovely. Lovely. And with that being said, go buy the book, get these people some baby milk and potentially an extended Bubble City universe. Once again, thank you very much for coming on. Also, thank you very much to all of our patrons, without whom this show would not be able to run. Go check out the link after you check out Justice Warriors. And in return for supporting the show and helping us stay independent, you can receive plenty of shit like early episodes, bonus episodes, Discord communities, direct chats, and so on and so on.
Breast milk.
And
yeah.
With all... breast milk, yes. We're adding breast milk to the many things.
Direct from Yugopnik, the source.
We'll use Hakim for doctor shit. We use me for under-the-counter alcohol. And JT has a child, so maybe he can supply breast milk. Oh, my God, that's disgusting.
Great. All right, y'all, go on, get out of here. We hope you enjoyed the episode. This has been The Deprogram. I'm JT.
I'm Yugopnik.
I'm Matt Boers.
I'm Ben Clarkson.
Libra gang, Libra gang.